Thank you, Ben. And now we'll hear from Ron Hamilton.
What I have to say is comedy time is over. It's an awesome responsibility to be representing the views and research of scholars around the world who support the use of multi-parameter IRT models in their work. I'm sure by the time I left for the NCME conference, I had read through 700 or 800 papers, books, reports, theses, littered papers across 2 countries, 2 offices, my house, and my car on the way to the airport. I believe my goal is to represent the views of thousands of scholars who basically feel that IRT models that fit their data can be useful, and that their intelligence should not be questioned for taking such a position. Let me begin by stating what this debate is not about. 1, this is not a debate about the utility of the Roche model. The model clearly fits some data sets, and so it has utility, and I and my colleagues will continue to use the Roche model in those situations. I expect you will too. 2, this is not a debate between users of the Roche model and users of other models. In fact, many users of the Roche model do not agree with the arguments advanced by Professor Wright. Using the Roche model does not mean you support all of the illogical, untrue, and unreasonable arguments we heard this morning and have read about in Professor Wright's writings for almost 25 years. 3, this is not even a debate about the views of George Roche. I will show later that the arguments advanced by Professor Wright and his co-workers are not even consistent with the views of George Roche. So what is this debate about? It's a debate about the validity of the arguments advanced by Professor Wright for the Roche model being the only IRT model worthy of consideration. Over the course of my presentation, I hope to touch on 9 fallacious arguments advanced by Professor Wright in support of the Roche model. Yeah. 1, placing too much emphasis on sufficient statistics. 2, failing to satisfactorily account for variability in item discrimination. 3, failing to satisfactorily account for non-zero item performance. 4, failing to successfully attend to problems such as omits, not reached, item context effects, etc., which impact on validity. 5, providing incorrect results on model validity because of the use of inappropriate model fit statistics. 6, failing to acknowledge the properties of item and ability invariance are characteristics of all IRT models. 7, recommending the deletion of misfitting items which can distort the trait underlying the test. 8, failing to recognize serious problems with the Roche model in important applications such as vertical equating. And 9, overstating problems with current multi-parameter IRT software packages. There's little that I can say this morning that will sway Professor Wright's views about the IRT field. He's heard it all before. In the past, when I have presented a good argument, he shrugs his shoulders, maybe waves his hand in a derogatory manner, and then questions my intelligence. By the end of the next 15 minutes, my guess is that in his mind, my IQ will be expressed by negative numbers. Perhaps the show and charisma help sell books and newsletters and computer programs. Perhaps, as one caller said to me last Friday, maybe they should sell popcorn on Tuesday morning. But this debate is not about a show or entertainment. It is about IRT models and fit and statistics. And regrettably, Professor Wright doesn't have a valid argument to stand on. But rather than shoot down each of the 9 arguments of Professor Wright in turn, let me present the case for considering multi-parameter models, and within that framework, address the shortcomings of Professor Wright's arguments. Let me begin with the arguments to support multi-parameter models. 1, nearly a century of testing experience. Many psychometricians of the 1940s were concerned because test scores used to assess ability were dependent upon the particular choice of items. Figure 1 highlights the problem. The same group of examinees would have relatively low true scores on a difficult test, relatively high true scores on an easy test of the same ability. The task was to find a mapping of the scores onto the ability scale so that invariant ability scores could be obtained. The goal of these early psychometricians was invariant parameters to describe items and persons. The breakthrough came with Fred Lord's doctoral dissertation at Princeton in 52. Lord proposed a two-parameter normal loci of unidimensional model. For almost 40 years, he continued to build on these theories and models and applications. Roderick MacDonald offered a highly appropriate comment in 1989. He said, and I quote, "Just about anything done in the field of binary item response theory can be thought of as a footnote to the seminal research of Frederick Lord." End of quote. This statement captures the sentiments of many psychometricians. Lord placed an item discrimination parameter in his model because empirical evidence of its importance and utility. To assume all item discrimination powers equal when it was well known then, as it is today, that items typically show variability would have been unrealistic. It was this same type of argument that led him to support the need for models like those proposed by Birnbaum. This is a very interesting example from a paper by Lord in 1970. He fit a three-parameter model to some very different kind of data. He then tried to fit the same data in a free form without putting the mathematical form, and he was quite amazed to see the high similarity. This is the kind of evidence that encouraged him to pursue the three-parameter model. Interest in multiple-parameter models was not an obsession for complexity, as Professor Wright has claimed, but a genuine desire to find useful models to account for variability in item parameters. Point number two, reasonableness of fitting IRT models to data. It would be sufficient to say that many scientists try to find models to explain their data, not the reverse. If this were not the case, we would still think that the Earth was flat and that the Earth was the center of the universe. Awkward data usually forces changes to a model. Rarely would scientists discard their data. Here is a statement that many of us can live with. You can read that, but the last paragraph, given the shortage of time, is the key one. We may tentatively accept the model described, investigate how far our data agree with it, and perhaps find discrepancies which may lead us to certain revisions of the model. Who wrote this? Fred Lord? Darrell Bock? John Tukey? No. Actually, George Rosh wrote this in his 1960 book. George Rosh was obviously not in support of models being more important than the data. Those who take this position advocating the Rosh model are in opposition to Rosh's own advice about conducting psychometric research. One argument advanced by Professor Wright for sticking with the Rosh model and discarding misfitting data is to gain the property of sufficient statistics as estimators. This is total nonsense. I'll give you three reasons. Six reasons are offered in the paper. One, the argument about sufficient statistics is a red herring. Professor Wright does not even use this property in his estimation procedures. In contrast, many Europeans do, and that is one important way in which their work is better. Two, the property of sufficiency of estimators is important, but not something statisticians worry too much about when they don't have it. Here's an example. With a normal distribution, the sample mean, which is used to estimate the population mean, is a sufficient statistic. But if the distribution is skewed, the median conveys more information about the central tendency of the scores than the mean, and that's why it's used. But the median is not a sufficient statistic, though every first-year measurement student knows of the value of the median in describing skewed distributions. Note, too, that in a non-normal distribution, the sample mean is not a sufficient statistic either. The property of sufficiency is also misstated by Professor Wright. In his best test design, he says, all persons with identical scores obtain identical ability estimates. This, too, is nonsense. This property of the test score is only true under the very special case where candidates see identical items. This is hardly the interesting case for which IRT models are used today. IRT is used to permit comparisons of examinees, though they've taken different items. Consider the two examinees with identical scores. Student A takes the harder set She obviously has the higher ability and will be estimated as such because the difficulty of the items is taken into account in the ability estimation process. With other multi-parameter IRT models, the basic process is repeated, with the additional parameters being used in the process to obtain the invariant parameter estimates. I hope we have heard the last of this sufficiency argument from Professor Wright. Number three, parameter invariance. The property of invariance, which is so important in IRT, in fact, it's the cornerstone. The characteristic is a property of all IRT models that fit the data to which the models are applied. Of course, the key issue for researchers concerns the types of generalizations that can be made. These can only be determined through empirical investigations. Generalizations over groups, over students being taught by different methods and different curricula, over different racial groups, and so on. Figure 2, which you've certainly seen before, highlights this important point. This is the property of item parameter invariance over samples. How much time do I have? Okay. Okay. I liked your first answer. Professor Wright has argued that item parameters cannot be invariant if the choice of examinee sample needs to be considered. But Lord reminds us that invariance is a property of the model parameters, not the estimates. Thus, care must be taken in practice to estimate model parameters well. This situation is no different from working with any other regression models. 4, usefulness of item discrimination. One of the strongest criticisms of the Roche model is its failure to account for variability and discriminating power. Traub in 83 states, these Roche assumptions fly in the face of common sense and a wealth of empirical evidence accumulated over the last 80 years. Table 1. I didn't have to look very hard for this kind of data. This comes from a recent report on the ASVAB and shows the biserial correlations for the item pools that were going to be used in the adaptive testing. The range of biserials is incredible. This is not the kind of data to which a Roche model can be fit, and we have found this same kind of data in many sets that we've looked at, and NAEP is another excellent example. 2 common arguments for using item discrimination are offered. 1, you don't want to lose some of your best items. Let's look at the next one. Here's an example. It's from the book by the book with Swaminathan and Rogers and myself. This shows a relationship between some one-parameter residuals, one-parameter item misfit statistics against Bicera, and you can see the pattern. You can obviously see what's going to happen if you start culling out misfitting items. The better strategy is to fit a more general model. In this case, we fit the two-parameter model, and you can see what the result is. A second reason for using an item discrimination parameter is you don't want to narrow your domain of content. Table 2 shows the interaction between item content and fitting a one-parameter and a three-parameter model. This was some data from the Maryland functional reading test. If you remove the misfitting items, you're likely to be left with no items in one or two of the content categories. There are other examples of this kind of point. Point number 5, is it hard to estimate the pseudo-guessing parameter? Definitely, but Bayesian priors and a proper choice of sample will help substantially. Is his interpretation clear? Not completely. This is the reason Lord called it a pseudo-chance parameter. More work is underway by Miss Levy and others to deal with this point. Fitting one parameter and three parameter models to NAEP math data, we'll put up the next one, I think really makes this point very clear. This is some data from NAEP. We sorted the items by easy and difficult, and open-ended and multiple choice, and the improvements as you move from the 1 to the 3 and the special problems in the problem of lower performance on the Roche is just, these results are so dramatic. Professor Wright was too busy with his jibes and put-downs in his review of applications of item response theory to comment on this very important result.
Please turn this cassette over to side 2.